Thank you very much. I want to thank Susie and Sally for arranging my ability to come and talk with you about the League of Women Voters. And also, I want to make sure that everyone, that I don't forget to say this, that in 1973, the League of Women Voters invited men to join as full participating members of the League. So if the men thought that they were going to be able to sleep through this presentation, hopefully that will encourage them to feel like full participants. So I'm going to figure out how I advance my slides here. I apologize. I should have figured that out before. And it doesn't work. Whoops, there we go. That'll do. Okay, so as Susie said, my name is Wendy Sanderson, and I have the honor of being the president of the local Skagit League of Women Voters of Skagit County this year. And I'm really pleased to be able to talk to you about the work that we do and some of the things that we've done locally to implement the state and the federal League of Women Voters policies. One of the reasons that I really enjoy being part of the League of Women Voters is that it helps me to frame and structure the work that I do to be participating and civically involved in our community. And I found this definition that really resonated with me because it basically what it highlights is that the reason that one wants to be civically engaged is to be able to make a difference. And so that is kind of what keeps me going and what keeps me involved in the league is the hope that some of the things that we do can make a positive difference and to help people in their communities to get along together, to work on how we organize ourselves to make sure that our communities are working and structured as positively as possible for as many people as possible. So the good news about civic engagement is that the Federal Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion has said that civic engagement is a determinant of good health. So that's real positive news. It means that if you're civically engaged, it's good for you. Maybe one of the not so good elements of civic engagement, though, is that it's never done. And we are learning all along that laws and principles that we thought were embedded in our democracy and that we could rely on are being questioned and in some cases being reversed. And so the idea of civic engagement is something that you're never done with and that requires ongoing vigilance is definitely something that I think we all have to keep in mind. And also that democracy, it isn't a spectator sport. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about the history of women's suffrage. And Susie did a great job of kind of organizing the high strokes, and I'm going to take that down just a little bit. In 1848, suffragists first met in Seneca Falls, New York, to start organizing and figuring out how to start the move towards women's suffrage in the United States. And some 80 plus years later, in August of 1920, the 19th Amendment was ratified. Those 19s and 20s, they'll get me every time. Sorry about that. The first person to propose a National League of Women Voters was Carrie Chapman Catt. And at a national convention of suffragist organizations, they had come together in Chicago in 1919. And Carrie Catt said, we're going to need to have a league of women voters where we all take all of these disparate organizations and come together and work together towards helping newly enfranchised voters to be able to use their new right to vote in the most positive way possible. And so In 1919, this is before the ratification of the 19th Amendment, but she could envision that a national effort was going to be needed in order to make sure that the right to vote was well understood by women and well used by those who were brand new voters. So the League was founded on Valentine's Day in 1920. Its first president was Maud Wood Park, and the founding principles for the League are, as you can see here on this slide, it's a nonpartisan political organization, was founded from the get-go as not being nonpartisan and primarily involved in encouraging people to be informed and active participants in their government. So from the very start, that was a founding principle of the League of Women Voters. So I mentioned Maud Wood Park was the first president of the League. And she was someone who had tremendous lobbying skills. She had been working on legislation and had been very politically involved for all of her life. And so was a really logical choice to be the first president. She wanted to promote good government, and she recognized that there were a lot of challenges in pulling together people who had diverse viewpoints. And she famously described the League of Women Voters in the early days as being an organization that has chosen to be a middle-of-the-road organization, in which persons of differing political views might work together in a program of definite advance on which they could agree. It has been willing to go ahead slowly in order to go ahead steadily. It has not sought to lead a few women a long way quickly, but rather to lead many women a little way at a time. In 1921, the first major legislation that was passed after the League of Women Voters was founded was the Sheppard-Towner Act. And you may have heard about that. It actually is one of those bread and roses type issues that Susie brought us the lovely Judy Collins music about. It was like the first foray of the federal government into public health kinds of issues. Prior to the Sheppard-Towner Act, public health issues were handled locally, either by state or most often by local governments. And under this new act, the federal legislation created 3,000 child and maternal health centers, mostly in rural areas, which helped to decrease the amount of infant mortality across the country. It included recommendations about child welfare and was really influential, again, in those bread and roses kind of issues. And it became clear that as women started to exercise their right to vote, that there would be more legislation that would be underscored and emphasized around principles of high prices, around things that people used in their homes, and public health and education. The road to legislative change can be really long, as we see by the length of time it took to ratify that 19th Amendment. And it's certainly fraught with compromise. And some of those compromises, looking back in history, we can see that many of them were quite regrettable. Because it's August, we're getting close to August 26th, which is Women's Equality Day. That is a holiday. You can mark it on your calendar, day to celebrate. And it commemorates each year the ratification of the 19th Amendment. I want to take a moment. Virginia K. Solomon is the current CEO of the League of Women Voters of the United States. And I wanted to take a moment just to read a subset of an article that she wrote for Women's Equality Day in 2019, saying, "Today is Women's Equality Day, celebrating the adoption of the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, guaranteeing women the right to vote. This major milestone in the history of our democracy was achieved over decades, even beyond the lifetimes of some of its greatest champions. Passing an amendment to the Constitution is no small feat. Actually, it's only happened 27 times in our country's history. But we mustn't romanticize the story of the 19th Amendment. The truth is that it did not break down voting barriers for all women. And even today, there's more work to be done. The path to women's suffrage was complicated and sometimes ugly. History books tend to mostly credit the courage and tenacity of white women. It's past time to amend the history books and tell the real story of the suffrage movement. It's past time we celebrate the women of color who were at the center of the movement alongside their white counterparts. And it's past time for our country to acknowledge that when the 19th Amendment was ratified, many women were still not able to cast their ballot because of Jim Crow laws that denied full enfranchisement. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't celebrate all the amazing women who fought for the 19th Amendment. We should. But in doing so, let us also ensure significant Black suffragists like Sojourner Truth, Ida B. Wells, and Mary Church Terrell have their place in history, a place equally as prominent as that of white suffrage leaders. She goes on to say, so as we celebrate this great achievement, we do so with the recognition that women's suffrage was not perfect. Progress towards a more perfect democracy is often messy, but we can't allow the means to justify, we can't allow the ends to justify the means, especially if it perpetuates oppression. Let us use the lessons of our history to inform our present and our future. Let us seek out ways to ensure all eligible voters have their voices heard and their votes counted. And again, that's Virginia K. Solomon, the current CEO of the League of Women Voters of the United States. So I wanted to mention the underpinnings of the League of Women Voters as an organization. There are essentially three pillars that guide our work. The first is voter services, which includes things like candidates forums and voter registration drives, and other kinds of activities that help voters be more informed about the people who are running to serve them in political office. The second pillar is civic education. And we have a couple of civics books about Washington state government that the League offers. And civic education is something that we find important for us to learn for ourselves as members, and also to work with our schools to make sure that the curriculum is broadly adopted and fair and actually implemented, that our kids are getting civic education. The third pillar is advocacy. Besides educating ourselves about important issues, we also have topics that we have extensively studied, and we try to influence legislation on those particular topics and items. In Skagit County, our league was established in 1995. There were about 30 people who got together at Skagit Valley College and decided they wanted to start a league here in Skagit. And our vision statement is here on the slide: every person should have the desire, the right, the knowledge, and the confidence to participate in our vote, in our elections. Underscoring our nonpartisanship, we do not support or oppose any candidate for political office. The way I personally got into the League of Women Voters was I was involved with the Dispute Resolution Center of Skagit County and as a community mediator, and was very concerned about the state of discourse in our political arena in about 2017. And the Dispute Resolution Center and the League of Women Voters paired together and collaborated on a whole series of programs that talked about civil discourse. These were very well attended. We had a public meeting and then some trainings about how to engage in public conversations about sticky topics. And because of the work, the openness, the generosity of the League of Women Voters, not only locally and here in Washington State, but across the country, to share materials that would help us put together these presentations. It made me realize I needed to be a member of the League of Women Voters. So I joined actually in 2018. I wanted to talk a little bit about how we locally implement activities around those three pillars that I mentioned. The first one is around voter services. And, you know, COVID-19 really messed up our style in terms of how we traditionally did voter registration drives and get out the vote drives. And our members are very creative people, and they actually came up with methodologies that would allow us to continue to do voter registration. We created a laminated poster that has QR codes that would allow people, when you take a picture of that QR code, it would take people to the Secretary of State's registration page. So we had some members who actually put those laminated posters on their cars. When they would park their cars, they taped those onto their cars so that people could see them and take pictures as they were parked in a parking lot or in some of those drive-by graduation events. We had members there. We also did drive-in voter registration at the food banks throughout the county. This particular picture is of one of our Spanish-speaking volunteers who worked with us and we had volunteers at the food bank, the Tri-Parish Food Bank, every Saturday from the end of August through the end of October last year. We had a booth that we were able to keep our materials, and people who were driving by and having their food bank materials loaded into their car could also, through their window, talk with our volunteers and get registration information and materials. And we were very fortunate to have so many Spanish-speaking volunteers who worked in conjunction with us to accomplish that. So COVID be darned, we continued our voter registration efforts. We also, every year, we put together what we call the TRI for They Represent You. It is a pamphlet that lists all over 90 representatives, elected representatives, that hold positions in our county. Everything from the cemetery district representatives all the way through the president of the United States. These flyers are available in the libraries and various places around both the Skagit office and the Republican Skagit Democratic office and the Republican Party offices have access to these flyers, and they'll have them at their booths at the county fair. So we try to make sure that people know who to contact and how to contact their elected representatives over the things that they might be concerned about in their community. We also do candidate forums. This is one that we did just recently on the Port District. And that was a recorded Zoom-based candidate forum. And we'll be doing more coming up through the general election here in November. I mentioned civic education as being an important part of what we do as a league. Our statewide league has actually created two civics books, one that is targeted towards middle school ages, middle school and adult through adult. And then we also have a brand new one that has just come out that is targeted towards elementary levels 3 through 5. And that sort of ties in with the legislation that's just been passed by our state legislature about requiring civics education in elementary level, not just in the upper grades. So we are working with OSPI and with the local school districts to show them the curriculum that the league has put together and working on adoption for those. We also have been working really strongly on the redistricting activities. Our league statewide is coming up with its own proposed redistricting map, which will be presented to the redistricting commission as a suggested way for the lines for our congressional and legislative boundaries to be drawn. We've done a lot of education on redistricting 101, what it's all about, how it works, why we have it, why it's necessary. And we've also done a series of what we call speak-up schools, which are designed to help people who want to testify in front of the commission to have the courage to do so and to have some advice and counsel on what makes good testimony and how could I make my testimony more impactful when I speak to the commission. We also here locally have been collaborating with the League of Women Voters in Kittitas County to put on education programs that are about different topics. The most recent one that we just completed was one that was called Learning to Talk About Race, is what we called it. We used an anchor book by Ijeoma Ulu called So You Want to Talk About Race. It went 13 weeks. We studied a chapter each week, and we had associated podcasts and other materials that went along with the readings of the chapter. We get together and then talk about those. And that was so popular that we actually are going to be offering that again this fall. And I just want to underscore, all of these things that we do are free. There's no charge for any of those. But the feedback that we got about the Learning to Talk About Race class, as I said, was so positive that we decided that we needed to do it again. So we also do our monthly presentations. We right now are doing a series on community policing. And our first community policing was learning about the embedded social worker at Mount Vernon Police Department. We actually had our second in the series just yesterday. Typically, our monthly meetings are the first Saturday of each month. And we learned about the sheriff's program and their community policing in conjunction, having social workers work in conjunction with the sheriff's deputies in their impact program. We're looking forward to some of the other communities and learning about their policing items as well. There's a lot of changes that are happening in police departments, and learning what's happening locally, we think, is really important. And we've been really impressed with what we've heard. We also have fun. So it's not all drudgery and nose to the grindstone. We are going to be showing a DVD called Courage in Corsets. It's a PBS. Maybe some of you have even seen it. It's a PBS DVD that was created. This was actually part of our centennial celebration, which totally got nuked by COVID. And the person who put this program together for us is just indomitable. And she said, I don't care that it's a year late. We're going to do it anyway. So on September 25th at the Burlington Library, we're going to be showing this video and having a conversation about women's suffrage. And this is particularly related to Northwest suffrage movement issues. So if you'd like to join us, please feel free to do so. The other thing, the other pillar in the League's mission is around advocacy. And our goal is to learn about issues and to maintain the nonpartisan status of our organization by recognizing that issues are not partisan. Issues are topics of civic concern, and the League studies a particular issue, and typically these studies are about 2 years long. So it's not a hit and miss, you know, slapping a promise kind of thing. We try to investigate the issue from all different aspects and perspectives and come up with a consensus among the study committee about what the League's position should be around this particular topic. Then that consensus item, the agreement, is taken to the board for adoption. And it is only then that a particular direction or position on a topic becomes something that the League can then say, the League supports this particular position. So we have a document called Program in Action. It's about 80 pages long. It holds just a short summary of all of the different positions that the League has taken over the years. And this is what guides our ability to be able to say that the League supports or doesn't support a particular topic that's coming up locally. these are some of the topics that we have issue papers around. And we also have 14 different issue chairs that are watching the legislation around these topics that are part of their portfolio. And we can subscribe to their newsletters, and every week during the legislative session, we're receiving updates on what's happening and then action alerts to help us know when to take action around issues that the league is supporting or opposing. So those are basically the fundamental things that the league is trying to implement here in Skagit County, and a little bit about how we are. It is very difficult to overemphasize the fact that issues are not partisan. And so if we can do one thing, it is to try to engage people in the conversation so that we can all look for ways to best have our governing principles match up with the majority of people's opinion here in our democracy. So membership is open to all men and women. You can join too. I want to just remind you as we close that you can be a voter. That is the new league logo around the elections. November 2nd is when the election, general election will be, and we are going to be helping to get people registered to vote, and we look forward to participating in candidates' forums and all kinds of voter education activities. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning and to tell you a little bit about the league and what we're doing here in Skagit County. Please feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. Thank you very much.